Welcome back to the Yoga Teacher Training Podcast. My name is Jeremy Devins, and this episode is number 92, Yoga Ethics and How to Create Safety for Students of All Backgrounds. So I'll be talking about some of the common misunderstandings and mistakes teachers make around the idea of holding space and creating a safe and inclusive environment, and some ways that you can make a class feel great for students of all levels, from beginner to advanced, all backgrounds, whether they're athletic or not. And I'll talk about the massive difference that a few simple words can make on your teaching and the impact it has on your students. If you want to get a free guide to a beginner sequence, that's really good all levels, all round sequence that you can use for any Hatha or Hatha-based class, click the link in the show notes or go to quietmind.yoga and you can check out links there as well. And you can check out any of my classes in the Quiet Mind Yoga membership to see how I put all of this stuff into practice and experience it for yourself inside the membership. The next teacher training will open up later this year. The dates are not announced yet, but you can get on the wait list to be the first to know at quietmind.yoga/YTT. So this question of creating safety is important in spiritual spaces because some spiritual spaces that are more like cults will tell you that you are the only person responsible for your safety. And there is truth in that. And I agree with that to a degree. But if we are getting into a space together and you are facilitating a space for me, you have a responsibility to me to how you create that space. And it is my responsibility to choose whether to come back or not to that space. But you have a choice in that. And there are some lineages of yoga that are what I would call abusive of this relationship of teacher to student. And there's many stories of this have come out in recent years, and you've probably heard about these things. And I don't do any of that, and I don't want you to do any of that. I don't think that is really even anywhere close to what yoga is about. But I think some of the dogmatic, top-down approach to teaching that is in the history of yoga has seeped through into some of those things. And they still exist in some lineages of modern styles of yoga. So that is not what we're talking about today. What we're talking about is closer to the Krishnamacharya lineage or even the post-lineage kind of way of teaching where we're integrating what works best from different systems and leaving out the rest and applying it to what will be of best service to the individual student in front of us. That's the most important question. Is what I'm doing going to help this student or not? And if it will, I'll do those things. And if it doesn't, let them go. So part of that is holding space in the room. So what does that mean to hold space? When I first started hearing this in like the 2010s, it was a strange term to me. I didn't really understand it. Now it's everywhere. Everybody uses this term. And some people even use this word without really knowing what it means and say that they're holding space. But really, there is an energy of them being sort of detached just because they've created an event where they are teaching a spiritual practice or yoga or something like that. Does not mean they are holding space. Just because you're teaching a class at a studio and you close the door and you're in that room with the students does not mean you're holding space. So what is holding space? Well, in my opinion, in my perspective, it's an energetic feeling. And a feeling that when I go to that class, I don't have to worry about anything in the room. I can just focus on my practice and my embodiment and following the cues. And if something comes up in the room, that teacher will handle that either very physically and tangibly, like a spider crawling across the floor that they let out the door, or emotionally and energetically, like somebody having an emotional release and the space feeling safe and inclusive for that student. Maybe somebody's crying, maybe somebody's angry, maybe somebody's feeling really down and sort of internal. And all of those energies are welcome in the space and included, and none is really excluded or pushed out. And even if there's somebody, for example, like breathing really heavily in an aggressive way, because maybe they learned that in another class somewhere that their breath needs to be really loud and aggressive for it to be an effective practice or something like this. And a good teacher holding space could create an environment where that student is acknowledged, and maybe they are breathing that way because they have hypertension or there's something going on where they need to breathe that way. But it's addressed and handled in a way that is inclusive to that student and respective to the other students in the space. So that could look like just going in to check with that student, maybe talking to them about their breathing throughout the class, addressing it first to the whole group of noticing your breath, noticing if there's any strain in your breath that you can soften here, And then maybe more directly to that student if it seems like it's disruptive to the energy of the room and the energy and experience of others. So that's one element of holding space, is addressing the individual needs and how they impact the collective energy in the room. There's the other element of addressing the energetics in the room, the energetics that you're creating. Like if you're coming to the class, just getting out of traffic, maybe you had a really busy full day yourself and you're stressed out, and you don't do something to regulate your nervous system and manage your stress, you are now bringing that into the space and imprinting that to a degree on the energy of the other students. Now, I might be losing some of you. You might be thinking this is too woo-woo and energetic, but you can feel it, right? Like if you go into a room where there's just been a big fight between two people, you can feel the tension in the room, right? Or you go in somewhere like a wedding reception, everybody's happy and loving, you can feel that energy in the room. Or a wedding reception where there's just been a big fight between the bride and groom, you feel that one too, right? So you know what I mean. Like you can feel energy in a room. And as yoga teachers and practitioners, we become more and more attuned to that and less numb to it. And we stop doing the things that numb us out over and over. And we spend less time and energy on those things. So it becomes easier to be attuned to these things. And as a teacher, part of the responsibility, in my opinion, is to be attuned to those subtle energies in the room. Is somebody tired? Is somebody anxious? Is somebody uncomfortable? Is somebody really embodied and present and grounded and they want to be in their practice, but somebody else in the room is in some way creating a disruption to the environment? And addressing all of those needs inclusively and not singling somebody out necessarily, but addressing if there is somebody with some sort of issue that you have some sort of space to connect to that person. Another way you can do this is before a class, taking time to say hi to everybody in the room. In person, this means going up to each individual, taking some time to have some level of connection, maybe a hug, maybe a hello, how are you doing, any requests today? And if this is online, you can do the same thing, just one by one, checking in with people. And when it gets to bigger groups, this becomes more difficult, but you can still do it even with a very large class. It might just mean coming in earlier to take time to do that, but I do highly recommend that because it gives you a chance to kind of check in where everyone's at and get a read for the room that you might not get as much if you just come in cold and don't connect with people. And then it allows each student to feel seen, heard, and acknowledged, and space to share something. Like if they're going through something in their life, they're not going to share it just voluntarily. But if you have a relationship and a space where they can share that because you're checking in every time, then you have more of a relationship there. You have more of a connection there. And then you can better serve them as a teacher. All these things are to a degree optional, right? You don't have to do these things to teach yoga. But I think they are very helpful in creating a safe, connected, inviting space to do the deeper work of yoga. And if we're there as teachers to provide that space to do deeper work, then that involves deeper connections, dropping in deeper with the students, and going beyond the surface level stuff. The number two big point here I wanted to make is how you can make classes feel great for all levels, from beginner to advanced. So you might have that very embodied, present student who's done years of yoga practice. They were doing yoga in the womb, and now you know they've been doing it for their whole life. Then you've got someone next to them who's never done yoga in their life, and they have a stressful 9-to-5 job and all this tension in their body, and they're just uncomfortable and concerned if they look weird or worried about what people think of them, and they don't want to be seen too much. Right? Those both are very welcome in a class, in my opinion. And you can teach to both of them in the same class very easily. And it requires having options for every pose. So rather than just saying, let's come into standing splits, you might offer variations of that. Right? Standing splits, you can bring your hands to blocks or to the floor or to your ankle. If you want more challenge, you can close your eyes. Right? So within that one cue, one series of cues, I offered the blocks for the beginners all the way to hands on the ankles with the eyes closed for the advanced student. Right? So there's progressions along the way. And good teaching involves offering those options when appropriate. Not every single pose needs that, but some poses really benefit from it. And just doing that regularly throughout a class has a huge impact on the class feeling very personal and personalized to each student. Because some days, even the advanced student wants to do less. Some days the beginner student wants to do more and they don't know what more is yet. So when you say what more is, they know and they can do it. So by giving the options, you allow every level from beginner to advanced to have room to explore in their body and their practice that day, knowing that every day is different. And just because they're advanced and you see them every week and you know what they can do does not mean they necessarily want to do or can do the advanced versions of poses that day. Maybe they have an injury, maybe there's something personal going on. You don't know. And your goal, in my opinion, as a yoga teacher and practitioner, is not to just do the most advanced pose every time. It's a practice of embodiment, of getting present, and using the body and the poses to get into presence, rather than using our bodies to force ourselves into shapes like contortionists or something like that, or gymnasts or athletes, which I think yoga is in a different category. It's not those things. Those things can be related, they can have overlap, but it's ultimately a practice of embodiment and a meditative movement, in my opinion. And that's my approach, and that, in my opinion, is close to tracking with the Yoga Sutra and the Bhagavad Gita and the source text of yoga, the Upanishads, these things, which are much more energetic, much more meditative, much less asana-based. And the asana is just a tool to get to the meditative state. And then the third big point I wanted to share today is the massive difference that a few simple words can make in your student's experience. And again, I agree with this idea that you are not responsible for your student's experience of safety and inclusion and presence. That is their choice and their work on themselves to do that or not, and to feel however they feel is out of your control. And when they come to your space that you're holding and you're inviting them into, you do have the responsibility of the facilitator to do your best to provide the service that they are looking for. And by using words wisely, you can better do that. So if you say things like, throw your arms up overhead, that's a very different energetic effect, very different impact than slowly raise your arms overhead. Or lock your knee, which can create hyperextension in the knees and the other joints. If you do that, if you lock your joints, if you don't have a lot of body awareness and experience to really know how to do that safely, that can be quite dangerous, rather than saying straighten the knee and engage the quadriceps, which is the effect that you're going for by saying lock the knee, but it's much safer, and you can teach that step by step in a way that has presence and embodiment in it. For example, if somebody doesn't know how to engage their quadriceps, you could stand up and just have them raise the right leg with straight knee, and they'll feel that activation on the front of their thighs. So quadriceps engaged. And then you lower the foot back down, and then you can find ways to activate the quads in other poses. So lots of little words, little word choices along the way make a huge difference in the class. Like, if you can't do this pose, by saying can't, you're implying that they are incapable. And rather than that, you could say, if you want something more or less, right? Some days you want more or less. It's not a matter of if you can or cannot do a pose. It's just that some days you want to do more or less. It's simple as that. So I would be mindful of using words like can't or don't. Like, for example, whatever you do, don't stand up, right? If somebody's in chair pose. Right, I've heard this in classes, like go into chair pose, whatever you do, don't stand up, right? It's some sort of like pushing, athletic, challenging approach, which is okay too. You can do that, but what is the intention? You know, is that something you want to be doing that day? Is that what you signed up for? Because of the nature of yoga, like it's such a broad term now, and you go to classes in this post-lineage era that we're living in, that you might go to a hatha class at five different studios and have five totally different experiences. And one of them is in this very much like push, push, push kind of approach. And another one might be a very gentle, like Vini yoga or Krishnamacharya influenced approach, which is much more like adaptable to each student and not pushing. Both are valid. Both are yoga. And it's up to you to choose the teachers that you like and resonate with. But if you are a teacher then to choose how you want to create a space and what feels resonant to you. What do you enjoy in a class and what kind of space do you want to create? Do you want to create an environment that is very motivational and athletically inspired and you're trying to push your students to their edges? That is totally valid, right? If you go back through the text, Hatha Yoga is all about that. The word Hatha means force, and it's sometimes translated as sun, moon, but if you go back in the old text, it's force. And the old Hatha yogis were the ones who did things that were extremely challenging, like keeping your arm raised overhead for your entire life. And if you haven't seen that before, just Google it. There's people who still do it today. Or things like just kind of forcing your body into extreme postures and what we would think of as like contortionism now, and holding those poses. And that is in some ways influence of modern yoga as well. Now there's lots of examples of these extreme practices that are at the roots of Hatha yoga, like hanging upside down from a tree all day, which is likely one of the versions of Viparita Karani, which we now interpret as legs up the wall, a very gentle pose. But in the old text, it may very well have been hanging upside down from a tree for a very long time. And that's examples of Hatha yoga in the past was this forceful practice. And it was about pushing your body to its limits to see what it's capable of, to show other people what they're capable of. And some interviews with modern yogis who do these things will say things like, if I can do this, if I can sacrifice my entire arm for my whole life, what are you capable of? If I could still live and have a happy life giving up my arm, what could you give up in pursuit of your spiritual path? Or what are you holding on to that is not in alignment with your true self, but if you did let it go, it would open up more spiritual connection and happiness and joy in your life? Right? These kind of questions are really powerful. And you could apply that principle to if you hold chair pose for 2 minutes in a yoga class, you know, compared to keeping your arm overhead your whole life, it's not that big of a deal, right? So there is certainly a great case to be made for that approach. That's not necessarily my approach to yoga. That's, you know, things I do similar in weightlifting and strength training. I do push my body in strength training, but I come to my yoga practice for more balance and more of a meditative experience. And that sometimes does include strength. It does include other things, but it's up to you what you want to create. And I generally lean more towards the Krishnamacharya lineage, which is also quite diverse. Right? He taught every student he worked with different things, but that's what I approach it with, is teaching each individual what will be of best service to them. And then generally teaching general classes that I think will best serve most people. So it's very adaptable, very much offering different variations, different options for all levels, and very much in this vein of holding space so they feel welcome, included, from all levels, from all backgrounds. And all these principles apply to different ethnicities, different ages, different weights, any kind of other background you can think of, that it's not about singling anybody out, but having a connection and relationship with each individual and creating a collective space that welcomes all variations and all options for exploration. Because we are all, at our essence, the Atman, drops of the ocean. We're all drops of the same ocean. And we're all having our individual experiences through our unique bodies. But there's a lot of things that are the same for all of us. We all breathe. We all have a heartbeat. We all have different expressions and movements in the body. And for the average body, we have these different movements like flexion, extension, internal, external rotation, all the anatomical movements that are possible in the body I talked about in past anatomy episodes you can go back to. But within that, we all have our own experience of it. We all have our own range of exploration. So I think a good class that creates safety and an environment of welcoming all students is respective of that. And if you want to force and use force and challenge to students, that is actually true to the lineage of Hatha Yoga, and you can do that. I lean against that, I don't lean towards that. I don't do that. But I encourage you to do what is authentic and true for you. Sometimes I do enjoy those classes, and sometimes it is helpful to have that. And some students will really resonate with that and actually need that. And they don't want to go to exercise or do other fitness practices. They want their yoga to also be fitness and like a workout. And I think there is space for that too. And That's great, because that can lead to deeper elements of awareness of pranayama, awareness of breath, awareness of self, all these things that we do through deeper yoga practice. Whether you get there from a very spiritual hatha class rooted in mantra and pranayama and mudras, or you get there from a class at a gym, which is, believe it or not, where I started. My first class was at a gym, and I might not have gotten into yoga as soon as I did if it wasn't available at my gym, because I just didn't grow up in an environment where anybody knew about yoga, and I had to go end up finding it on my own. And fortunately, it was there at a gym in 2008 that I was going to, so I got to go check it out. So whatever door people come through, great. And wherever they come out of that, great. Whether they just go to one class or it becomes their lifelong practice, great. Right? Every individual has their own experience. And I feel it's my responsibility as a teacher. And if you are a teacher, something I would invite you to explore is this responsibility of having everybody who comes through that door feel welcome and invited to know what they're getting into and be clear about what expectations you're creating in the room and what they can expect and see if it's for them. And people who resonate will come back. People who don't resonate will go away and find something else. And you don't really get a lot of negative feedback as a yoga teacher. People just don't show up. That's how you know you're getting negative feedback. They don't show up. And sometimes they don't show up because of other things, school, work, family, whatever. But if you keep teaching and people aren't showing up at all, then you're really doing something wrong. Because there's going to be people who resonate with what you offer and your unique way of doing things. And the more you're clear on what that is and more attuned to that frequency of like, okay, this is what I offer. This is what I enjoy. This is what I want to create. And I'm very clear on it. And I make it clear in the space that I hold and the environment that I teach in and the room that I create. And people who want it will resonate to it and come to it. And I'll do my best to share about it and talk about it and express and manifest and hold that frequency in how I carry myself on social media and in my marketing and website and all that. And the people who want it will be attracted to it. And they'll see, this is what I was looking for. Or, oh, this is not what I was looking for. And they'll move on. So we all have something unique to offer. And people who are looking for what you have to offer will find you the clearer you are on what that is that you offer and how you hold that frequency. So if you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to leave a review, share it with a friend. And again, you can get your free PDF Hatha Yoga Sequence for Beginners. That is a good all-around practice. And you can listen to my previous episode, number 91, for more on that. That's based on one of my most popular sequences that I taught that appeals to all levels. And if you're interested in the yoga teacher training, you can join the waitlist at quietmind.yoga/YTT. And you can check out the yoga membership there, quietmind.yoga. Thank you for listening and look forward to sharing more with you in the future on the Yoga Teacher Training Podcast.